sorry, Mr.
I don't know why does it seem that now we don't have time to visit or something, and back then we visited. And yet you had it took to do things seemed to take a moment.
Well, you gotta consider. In those days we're living in an agricultural environment. After 6 o'clock the world ends. And you don't have anything to entertain you other than your mouth and a couple of objects and then you could be careful.
It's called kids.
And then you listen to the power of the dogs yelling all night. And then you enjoy the possible sunlight or the starlight for the full moon. Or it's down by the river and here it just jumped.
I used to go up there.
But then the elderly folks were forgetting the fact about over the hill when they were in there and these pictures or something. And we have kids sit back and listen to that. So when you stick around too long, you hear it, they say, oh, go on, go to bed. When you go to bed, you don't want to sleep with that idea. And now we have to sleep at all.
That's true.
So you look at the ceiling.
Now
we need
the apple orchard
and
climb the tree.
And the character fire fire with the castle around the other fire. And after a while, it starts to interfere with the thing that the water going up in the night time to see the fire fly up by around and interfere with the night to rescue the entertainment. Looking at fire fly in the dark.
So now
we're trying to entertainment by making a TV set around the fireflies.
And sleep room.
Well, you get up next morning, get on board your four-wheeler. Take on the road. You go just 5 miles on the road, there's a lot of rocks. 5 miles on this road, you got a lot of four-wheeler trees. You know what? Four-wheeler trees, the four-wheeler horses. Everybody's coming from it.
But we seem to be going faster, and I can't tell whether we're really accomplishing anymore. It's almost like spinning wheels.
Well, that's the cost of evolution, because you can't go back. You gotta go forward, you gotta move. So the investment in living is the investment in motion. To see. The trees are there, they're going to be for a long life, they're looking to, and they provide all opportunities for you to make it. So you and I would never be satisfied in one position longer than the business. The incident that is about to be, or wondering with your mind. Going to sleep. Even you sleep, you can't stop trying not to sleep.
That's what you try to do with yoga, though, to stop all the fidgeting, right? Is that right? Okay. That's what you try to do in yoga, is to stop the fidgeting and calm it all down?
That's what you're trying to do.
Now, this is Linda Gardner.
That's what you're trying to do. So we find out what they are actually doing is an exhausting technique. So you get bored, so somebody who doesn't want to be disturbed comes along and gives you a technique not to get bored. It's called repetition. He knows fully well, only by repetition, you can get sleepy and fall asleep. We'll do anything to repeat.
The rosary.
So, but tomorrow you got to build a fence. So you need to come in and say, look, here's the best repetition for tonight, to prepare you for tomorrow, Thanksgiving. And if you listen to what they say, then you better You need to dig a hole for the horses, dig a hole for the horses, dig a hole for the horses, dig a hole for the horses. And then you walk under the roof. And all night, you're digging a hole for the horses.
Are you tired of
me? So anyway, ready to get up now and come around and knock at the door. You ready to go to work? You dig a hole for the horses? Dig a hole for the horses? He has your shovel. You dig a hole for the horses? Dig a hole. Build the fence by digging the hole and putting the post in. And after you've done about, say, 300 feet of it, then you find one, nail the post across, nail the post across, nail the post across, nail the post across, nail the post across. See, nail the post across, nail the post across. You do that, you have to do. After a few.
I feel like it has some type of history. You know, I've got some that's glazed, like everybody else, but then I brought another one and it's sand.
Yeah. You tie it up in the market, and then you work it into that one.
Was there a reason why they started doing it that way, or was it just an interesting texture?
Well, the thing is that they're trying to duplicate what nature did to the rock. Most of the thing that they do there is duplication of what we think. For instance, all right, they'll make a design on it. Background. They use a skin or a bark, or they use a saxophone. They can find little pebbles, so small, they're all individual like grits. And then if they roll it, and then they split them up to form the actual design. And you'll think that the design is actually chiseled up in a rock like that. But what they did, the background slab, the soft, puppy-like slab that they mix up. And then they find specific colors, the little grits, like a bit of a pepper. And they find them in large quantities, and they stick them where they dry. It's called sandstone paper. The actual sand.
It's
not a painted sand. It's like over the other. I'll show you. When you have a crystal of iron, crystal of lime, crystal of silicon, and a crystal of agate, all these different little crystals. But the crystals are like one little grit. One little grit. Mm-hmm. Yeah, a grit.
You
can
see that.
It's like a. Then you squash up a black pepper. And they have grits, the thing is all called like little grits, they run. Mini marbles, like you look at mini marbles on the microscope. And they run. And you take them, they work with the hands, you stick them together. And you get the even, and then you walk it, the skin. You use a kind of a and they come even, and your paper actually made like that with the rock. That's how much it is, always melted.
It's beautiful. I went there and I saw some, and gee, I'm going to go home with this. And it was made in Japan.
Yeah. You know what?
Yeah, it was Japan. No, it wasn't Japan, it was Mexico. But I had talked to an Indian Navajo before, and he said the look was the same. I could tell you a bit.
But the Mexicans, spend time to learn it from the Navajo. Then to go back to Mexico to find the same stuff on the Mexico side. Then they make it on the Mexico side of the border. And then the American comes along on the American side of the border and he puts his hand across the wire mesh. He hands him the border and takes the object across the wire. So then the Navajo is puzzled. Where did you get this from? Because the American guy is going to put this canvas to put the Mexican design here for sale in competition with the Navajo. That's what they do.
Yeah, and you know that.
But the Mexicans went to study it from the Navajo, went back to the Mexican side, makes the design on the Navajo, and sells it to the American guy to sell it on the American side.
Well, they've got it up there in the Navajo side.
Yeah.
Well, it's Grand Canyon.
Well, the Navajo asked them to put something to make sure that the object is genuine Navajo art. And that's how they go by the signature of the image. And they keep a tag on all their Navajo artists. So if he's buying it from an American stamp, it looks genuine American Navajo art. But until you see the signature, you know that it's made in Mexico.
If he hadn't have told me, I wouldn't have known.
But the point is this. The Mexican man actually came over to the Navajo place, studied in the Navajo person, paid the man the money to learn it, and went back on the other side of the fence, simply because the material is more available on the other side than on the Navajo side.
In Mexico?
Yeah, there's more material on the other side. What do you think they call Arizona, New Mexico? New Mexico or Old Mexico?
But it's a long hike between the two.
That's the American trunk line. You know the trunk line? You heard of the trunk line?
Heard of it, I don't know.
That's a road between Asia to Far East Asia to Middle East Asia. Right up to Europe, where the European world across the world. It's like a route 10 or 66. Or something to stay tidy. There's a trunk out. But that's the same thing like that over here.
So they're carting that little pottery.
Yeah. But when you see, you know, on their side, the Mexican side, there's more of that material sitting there doing nothing. The Navajo people have been doing it for centuries. And then the Mexicans came over and saw it and they studied it and then back and then they started digging back the earth or something.
But I didn't see, there are other tribes making jewelry and all, and I didn't see anything like that sandstone.
Sandstone is Navajo.
And they say the Navajo make, no, it's the Hopi that makes very small jewelry.
This is the Indian jewelry. That's one of the oldest techniques in the world. That was brought from Egypt to the technique. But the Indians made it.
How did you?
Well, the person who studied it. So you can go back and look at all these books on Egyptian craft and spend time to develop the picture. There was a ship that was sunk on the way from it was going from Egypt to Canaan and it got sunk. And in that ship they found artifacts. Today it's in the Israeli Museum. They find swords, two swords, that's how the back is going to finish. It is dried copper and silver.
It's copper?
This one is made of silver wood. But the person who learned this art went to school and bought it to develop a technique. Then he did a lot of research to develop a technique. They cast it in the sand.
They do a lot of sand.
Yes,
and work it. The work is done on the metal before it is made into a ring?
No.
Done after the ring?
They cut the stone, they have a kind of soft stone that they dug out. And the stone has the impression, and they melt the material into it, and the material sets up in that stone. And then they lift it out of the stone.
What is it called? Does it have any name?
They call it sand casting, but I don't know another name
it's
called. Sand casting. What is comical, you think of an Indian man who's doing the research to get the technique. Turns out it's not an Indian man doing the research to get the technique. It's a Chicago man.
That's
bad, yeah. Who spent all his years doing research and ended up finding this technique. And finding the stone there in one of the Indians and casting it here. So I like to impress it, those companies. I recognize it from some of the old manuscripts that the ships of the sun in the time of the Mary Magdalene relatives and the great Jared. He used to have the scroll for them. I recognize it, and I saw it there. I don't teach us to make one of them. I was surprised. But we usually make them out of silver and copper. Then I asked him if they wanted the silver and soft gold.
It was from a ship that was sunk of Mary Magdalene's relative.
Well, she was married to Joseph of Arimathea's brother.
Oh, that's right, the ship builder.
Yeah, and so many of their ships were sunk off the coast of the Great Filipina by the Greek. They're doing a lot of undersea diving now around that area, bringing up a lot of artifacts, tracing the fact that there was a big shipping industry going on in the Faroe times, the kind of borders.
Put it down, doesn't it go back to Atlantis?
You said to release the metal, you had to break the mold, sand mold.
Well, you have to chip it, right?
Chip it. Then you have to make a new mold.
Yeah, you have to make a new mold.
So each one is original.
Yeah.
Therefore, each one will have a different laboratory.
You can buy them all if you want, but you can't use it. Because when they spin the mold, the edge where they have to cut it to separate. It's bigger to push it back together, it won't hold it. Before it's not going to hold it. But you can actually buy the mold from him because you're selling the mold. Each mold is to be individual and finished mold. They call it sandstone casting. Because because it usually affected the sight on the leopard.
Didn't they used to make omelets? That was more in Atlantis?
Well, I thought this gets spread into a lot of things, but these ideas are also being found in other areas. That's what's so funny, you don't know how they get the other area.
I seem to associate it with Atlantis and Cancun. Well, I guess you'd say Atlantis. In that case, it kind of, you were playing out of space.
The Bermuda Triangle is in space. Not too long ago. Yeah, this was not too long ago. Some people who were supposed to be lost in the Bermuda Triangle were found floating on their own boat 3 months ago.
When were they gone?
They've been lost, they were reported lost in 1948.
When did they say
they
were
being found?
Yeah, they were reported lost off in the Bermuda Triangle.
Yeah, but were they found down in the Everglades in off of Florida? Where were they found?
Right off in the Bermuda Triangle.
Okay. They were still there in the same space.
That many years? They didn't
have a regulation.
It was in the
encounters of the third kind.
They had the pictures of that. The whole family that was together.
That's neat.
They were reported lost in the 40s, and then nobody could trace them back. And then they found the whole boat complete and everything. So they're not people. Only one thing is, they can only recall being in a spinning part of the ocean that seemed like a soup. And that was
like a whirlwind?
Okay,
now you tell us where they were.
Then they came out, and then they came out many years after.
They've been whirling all that time?
Well, they had
really?
No conception of time.
No conception of time.
I didn't say what they did. I want to know what you say they did.
What I say, I'm just reporting what the reporting of the doing the research now.
I want you to do your own research. I know, my curiosity.
So they have a whole program that's called the Case of the Abducted. They're doing a case in the town. They can any such report. They're required to make reports of abduction.
Did they
pay? No.
It's just like in cameras. You know, all of a sudden, there they are. They got their plane back. Because they didn't get the people.
Well, what's his name over there, sitting there, Rent, the last trailer.
Right.
And he did a whole year of training.
It's
probably
he got all the seasons of treatment.
He got the whole spectrum of the seasons of 3 months. And so what he did, he went into tomorrow, he came back into yesterday, and now it's functioning today. And it all happened right in the planet Earth. So he's one for the guy.
And what is your explanation?
My explanation is the world is too small.
But if you got bigger, would it still fit? Yeah.
But that,
I mean, when he went to Australia, it was a different time frame.
That's why he went to tomorrow.
That's the international date.
Because the dateline.
They're ahead of us there.
They're into winter.
Yeah. They left here, and you arrived there, because they're a record.
India spring.
And it was our spring. And then you have to come back. It was their spring, but it was all
summer.
where he did a whole year in 3 months. So he's very confused right now. Which is part of the world that identified him. Tomorrow, yesterday.
Just think how you would have been if you'd been able to go to China.
And that on to Australia.
Well, that's if it happened to Melissa and Vicky. They're still pleasant with tomorrow, yesterday, and today. They can't get on their system.
From going to China?
Yeah.
When they went to China?
They went to China.
I had that about a month after coming back from India. And I'd wake up in the night, and I was sure I was in India. And next thing you know, there's the cat that's in there. Yeah. Hey, this is not India. What is jet lag really anyway? Besides tomorrow, today, and maybe.
Well, we got a lot of excuses for jet lag.
It was you who said if you go west, you're okay. If you go east, you better eat better.
Well, you see, the thing is this. It doesn't matter where you go on the planet. You can eat solar. That's the one thing about solar eating. You can eat solar any part of the planet, any time.
You just go by where you're at.
See, because if you're 24 hours, you're going to be in the area where it's going to be either morning or midnight. So if you're there 10 o'clock in the morning, which is 10 o'clock at night in the other part of the world, by the time you arrive there, it's 10 o'clock in the morning again, that part of the world. So why did you do double jerk this?
They just have a little flush.
Right. They don't have a problem.
And if you didn't eat solar, what happens when you go east?
Hmm?
Why did you say that? If you don't eat solar.
Then you got a problem because you got a jet lag. So most people like a custard beef egg in the morning. So when they arrive there, they're going to like, what do you think? Then they got the plan.
Just go to India and they're eating rice.
But if you are eating solar.
Morning, noon, and night.
If you're eating solar, you can leave here at 10 o'clock in the morning, eat an apple, and spend in the evening where you're going to. When you arrive, it's 10 in the morning.
Eating another apple.
You don't go eat
just going to Pakistan. You ought to tell her about drinking the
Well, if she's born there, it's no problem. If they weren't born there, they got a problem.
Yeah, I was born there.
No problem. They travel with a lot of countries, and then they come back to America after you've gone for 28 days, then drink a little Jim Beam, or you can get it, you disappear in America.
I did it.
I know you did it, I told you I'm going to America.
You know, I was very careful in Mexico, I did it just right.
But the same way, Jenny Pease did it, she went all the way across the internet, tried in the local alcohol, kept going up, she came back to the United States of America.
Didn't
that
take a
plane. And she called back to me, I got the problem. I said, what, you mean to tell you that David Jim Beam when you got back in the state? No. So I reached out and took one of the drink this.
What are you drinking?
Jim Beam. You know Jim Beam?
Not really.
Bourbon.
Daniel went out and got me a Bush because he figured that was close enough to home ground. It's probably
made in California.
Corn.
Corn whiskey.
I should got a whiskey. I've got a beer.
You said home. Which gardens are in Innsbruck?
Well, if you want to be safe, he decided to design it perfectly. He just picked a drink, and he decided to plant it, no matter where you go. It's hot sake. That's made from rice. The rice is the national leaf of grass all over. And if you heat it, that is going to get disturbed. Then you ensure yourself against the humidity doesn't go into any part of it.
Did they have it everywhere?
They have it on Japan Airlines if you want to travel that way.
In the eastern countries, the rice wine is always available in any hotel.
Is it best to use the tequila?
Is it best to drink it before you enter that country or when you come back?
And when you get
then,
depending on the dysentery, it's better to take it in either place because if it's hot sake, it's hot sake. So it doesn't make as long as you're going to use it. And most of the problem in those countries is not the cooking of the food, it's the dish. When it's washed, what they wash it with after they use the dish, they don't wash it hot water, they wash it cold water. So that's how you may get the mimic dysentery from the dish and wash it cold water. And for the disposable dish, you don't have a problem. But so in a disposable dish, the dishes are washed with cold water, and that cold water possible can be immediate dysentery carrying. So to safeguard yourself against that, is to throw the hot sake over the food in the serving, and that insulates, sterilizes the food and the plate and everything. And when you finish it, that's it.
I won't get a hangover or anything like that.
No, you can't get a hangover from hot sake. You got to prepare for that. Remember what
you see it from one of them?
What Paul said was Timothy? Paul said to Timothy, take a little wine for your stomach's sake. But in America, we drink a little wine for our brain's sake.
A lack of brain's sake.
That's where you get sick.
Same with yogurt.
If you take a little wine for your stomach's sake, one jiggle on top of their food, you're insulated against it. And so, I'd suggest you drink some hot sake too.
When you get home, also. If you go to an American hotel, I mean, where a lot of tourists go, you may be able to get it because India would cater to the Americans, even to me, in a hotel.
So you can
But that bit about coming home. And you know, I did it. I didn't think anything of it. And then next thing I know, I'm going to say it.
It was just every gesture they hung on, they jeered from the balcony of the Japanese people.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
There you go. Life.
I don't know what's life.
I don't know, he went out, I think he was getting off. It was dressing. Oh, we might as well do it to everybody.
See how to come in and get the dish.
Is there any significance to people coming in and out my back door? What is it?
It's more easy to be accepted.
Leaving the back door, same thing. But John just looked out the back, and John always comes in my back door. The first time you all came, you came up through the back and in the little pantry. It threw me off.
Everyone came in the back door. It was wonderful.
Nobody used it there. In fact, we just found the door so open in the front. Unless you find one of those keys for the other door.
Well, there is other ways out, but
yeah.
You gotta lock your way out. You gotta lock the door on the way out, and there's no way you can do that.
I have a feeling Christopher's gonna do it too, because Cliff tells me later that, you know, he came home one night, his deadline, he wanted to go back to a party, so he went back. I just think, suppose I'd gone upstairs and he wasn't there, that would have been a shock.
Sounds like it's raining again.
Hey, I want to remember to ask you to give me more information about Echoloptic. I think you said it's better to watch it. You get the strobe effect by
blinking. Right.
That would be all the way through?
Yeah. I see, the thing is this, your sense of retention is speeded up by the moving effect of the eye.
And yawning also? And that's just because when you yawn, you remember better.
Well, what is happening when you go into meditation and it becomes echo-optic?
Well, that's the whole idea of meditation. You see, most people don't know what are you trying to accomplish in meditation. You know what you're trying to accomplish. We've got a lot of things we've taught of us. But when we really come to the final experience, what you think it is that you're accomplishing in meditation.
Peace and understanding. It puts you in a tranquil state,
It depends on what I want at the moment, I guess. And then sometimes I just meditate.
You might guess.
Thank you.
Okay, well, you tell us. I remember the very first time we ever met you, it was at, Mary Kay Tanaga had set up at a church nearby, and the whole talk was on meditation, and you used the English language again, and every letter in there had a meaning, moving, you know, matter. I don't remember what they were, but
energy was one.
Energy acting on consciousness.
Directing individual thought activities. Total observation of oneness with the moon and our nature.
You're right. I started writing that down this afternoon.
I missed all that.
Yeah?
I missed all that.
Moving electrons.
Okay.
Directing individual thought activities. Towards.
What did you say?
Towards.
I'm sorry.
Two words.
I could have sworn it was
electrons. Directing individual thought activities towards
intuitive observation. Or observation independent of the senses. That's what intuition is. And oneness. And it's not only an observation, it's a oneness independent of the senses with noumena, or nature. So what you're actually doing with simple language, you're reliving the memory of this form binding in the ovum that put you together. But you don't realize it until it happens to you after it's over. Many, many incarnations that you're receiving over and over. That is exactly what you attempted to accomplish. To relive the memory of the actual journey of the sperm bonding with the ovum to put you together. The ovum is your skull, and the sperm is your spine, and the sperm doesn't bite the ovum gobbles up the sperm. And until you live it, you don't know for sure what you are. And therefore, that particular experience is called enlightenment, because the moment the crunch of hearing the bite on the neck of the sperm in you by the ovum, the whole world around you becomes like a 4th of July. It's called moving electrons. And so it's like eyes open, eyes shut. The whole room is nothing but moving electrons. But then, 7.5 minutes is called the crazy state or schizophrenic state. The next 7.5 is called night of the soul, where you don't see nothing, hear nothing, and you don't know if you'll ever come up with it. But if you stick it out at the end of 15 minutes, all around you is atoms. And for the first time, you can trust an atom by walking in the cognitive flow. That's the mind balance, that is solid. As you look at it with a certain awareness, and then all of a sudden it shifts and it becomes moving atoms. Even the chair I'm sitting on, I accept it's solid, but then when it shifts and it becomes moving atoms, if I panic, I ain't going anywhere to do the thing. I'll panic only inside of it. Condition. But then I can also move through it if I don't panic. It's called materializing and dematerializing at will. So all the realized masters of it, those who realize it and master it, are able to interface with the density of matter, acting as a mass and acting as no mass. That's very far from with Shirley McLean. She's busy trying to get out of her head, the outside of her body, to travel in light. And we are busy interfacing our mass by being the light. She wants to be a moth. She prefers to be butterflies.
The 15 minutes is a delta.
That's right.
And the whole business then is advantage. Your
schizophrenic
fit, that's a panic.
You see, 50 minutes on a clock, it looks like very little time to sit down and try to get into that experience by recalling it. It isn't so easy to experience, because that 50 minutes may seem like 50 million years. That's how come Einstein made the remark, relativity is, if you are with your friend for 2 hours, and you're ready to leave, it will seem like 2 minutes. But if you put your finger on a hot stove for 2 seconds, it will seem like 2 hours.
But it's all relative.
Correct. The reason being is that you need your 5 senses to observe nature. And your 5 senses are the result of an ovum gobbling up its work, putting you together. But you're no mechanism until you breathe. So even though the ovum gobbled up the sperm to form the human body and dilated itself for 9 months in the mother's stomach, you still got to cut the cord and come out and breathe on your own. That's the biggest anguish. If you breathe the Hebrew, the Lord breathes, it flows back in the soil, and the soil is the pH factor all the time, So you are elements, if you don't like it. You're stuck with it to me, I'm stuck with it.
You're stuck with it, but you're stuck with it. But then you learn to work with it through understanding.
But you see, the question is, who is stuck with it, not with what?
Oh, it's who is stuck with it.
Yeah, you see, when you take a bath and look in the mirror, you see what you are. But you can't go on the road like that because it will be considered indecent, so you put on a legal food. I take it a bed sheet and wrap it around with a tie string in the middle and call it a moo-hoo, and that's legal food. Now if you want to become egotistical food, you take a lot of paint and pat it in the face up, and then put on all the accessories, and then they got the egotistical food. The legal food is to wrap a sheet around you and walk up in the road, and that's acceptable. You're not indecent. But what you are, is minus the chief and all the pain after you just got out of the bathtub. That's what you are. What are you doing?
is echo optics an aid to meditation afterwards?
Echo optic is an aid to help you to live with your schizophrenic experience after you go through it. When you learn to relive the ignition switch in your brain. Instead of panicking or feeling stressed out, that everything in this room is moving so fast, echo optics get you to become acquainted with what is called visual speed. Not chemical speed, but don't go take chemical speed to get a visual change. See, a lot of people take chemical speed to get a visual change. But what you want to do is take a visual substance with pictures that you're familiar with and then run fast to interact the brain. It's called rapid eye movements now. To force the brain to shift from too long an identification to a glance identification and a retention, so you find photographic memory. So you speed up your observation through the rapid eye movement of the brain. But this technique is not a new technique. The yogis have been doing it for centuries. They just didn't have mechanical ways to trigger it. We just developed mechanical ways to trigger it. But if you were to sit down and do a yoga test, in a yoga class, they would want you to memorize a whole big page of words like that, and at the same time do a mathematical formula on a blackboard, and then come and draw something that somebody's drawing, and then remember what somebody's talking about. They got about 9-10 people going on, all giving the same different information, and you got to sit down and recall everything, and that's the test. So if you really relax your brain to the level of potential, everything comes in exactly like photographs. So you can go and do the whole thing there, and then you pass the test. So that's how the yogis used to test themselves, if they really have developed this state of awareness. And the acupuncturist did another thing, to see if they developed their memory, was to take a statue and have the 366 reference points drill it with like a hole, and they cover it with a rice paper, and they give you a pin. And you have to go stick it to the paper, and if you find the right spot, you go into the hole, because the paper will go in, see? If you don't go in, and you push it to the wrong spot, then you know you're failed. Mm-hmm. So that was the way they used to test it in those days. You still got a type of the test going on now in China, so therefore doctors have to pass that test. The big statue of the city hall.
Liberty.
Liberty, all right, yeah. And you have to stick the paper in the right location.
Again, I guess this is changing the subject. What you said, the Statue of Liberty was the I Am principle. The essence of the anyway. All right, with the China's Statue of Liberty being copied all over the world, sort of, is this the I Am presence?
Yeah.
As freedom moving in this.
You see, the geometrical structure is a means of inspiring the individual to be dedicated to his or her I Am-ness. And to trust in the I Am-ness of himself. But they have to have some kind of physical object to motivate them. And so therefore, artwork was the outcome. So when I say one picture is worth a thousand words, there was a kind of an inspiration to the mind frame. But one experience is worth a thousand pictures. So one protest is better than 100 statues.
We didn't end up there.
But that's the whole purpose of living in the now.
What's the
common
pattern that triggers that?
Liberty or freedom is the principle that no price is too high to pay. Liberty is the principle of freedom. That no price is too high to pay. Because no greater love than he would lay down his life for his fellow man in liberty. And if you see the picture of squirrels moving from home in the Yuthi Canal, there are many squirrels battling to get you to be the winner, versus those who are battling against you so you don't become a winner. Now think of that one. Daddy throws out the sperms, and mama got the ovum. And not only one sperm is thrown out, there's hundreds of them are thrown out. And some are working for the winner to win. And some are working to prevent the winner from winning. Now, the ovum is already set up. So if the person had 128 menstruations and they weren't conceived, that's gone. The next month is going to be 129. Ovum, 129. So this is what happens in the person's stomach. It's the ovum 129, cutting sperm 129, coming sperm 129, it's the ovum 129, cutting sperm 129, coming sperm 129. Well, among dogs and cats and everything, they all gather around sperm 129. The problem is whether you're husband and wife or your boyfriend or girlfriend.
Are you heading for the fence?
But you're still ovum 129, calling sperm 129. All right, when the race begins, hundreds of sperm are thrown out. But the 129 sperm that's in the sequence of its formation is going to be drawn to the frequency of the ovum. And all around it, there are approximately 50 that act as guardians to insulate 129 to get to the ovum.
So it's already programmed.
It's already programmed.
So we but get
130 can't get it. But anything below 129 to 127 can get in, and they'll have twins. So this is all from 1 through 9, and that's just from 1 through 9 is coming up. But then the ovum separates and it has two entrances. Then it has to slow down. Then the next one that I'm moving up, one trio can move in. The next one that can move in is a 1-2-8. So the 1-2-9 moves in, and the 1-2-8 lines up, and then move in together. If you don't move in together, you got a problem. And you can always find out who group. We call it Siamese twin. That's 1-2-8, jump the gun too fast, and muck it up. And nature would not permit such a thing to happen, so you lock it. Because you're given a chance to line up his frequency, he didn't line up efficiently, and he jumped the gun, and nature would lock it. So when the Siamese twin is taken out of the room, you can always have a full group. The one neck is longer than the other. So they're all the head of it, I guess. And that's the one that you, he's the 1-2-8, and that's the 1-2-9.
They were showing Siamese twins on television.
But just regular twins, they one waited.
Right, and they come out even, one after the other. Because the ovum separates, and each one bonds, and then it's formed at the end of the time. And then when the time is they're coming out now, ovum 1-9A is coming out, ovum 1-9B is coming out second.
What's the significance of twins?
The significance of twins is equal opportunity to equal momentum. Life is reciprocal. You have a right brain and a left brain. And the opportunity for both to act equally in a form. Because you're a composition of a boy and a sperm. So the mother in you and the father in you is presented to act now. As a twin formation. Now, funny thing is this, if you have triplets, you'll always find the oldest one and the youngest one are totally in opposition, and the middle one is the one who gets out of trouble.
Gets all the fun?
The middle twin gets out of trouble. The older one is put into a situation to take care of other two.
Means it's babysitter.
Yeah. And the youngest one is always in opposition to anything that the old one has to present. And the middle one, the old one, the young one, always arguing, and the middle one is always there trying to
do. So if Helen and Charlton don't work at eight this time, they're going to be equal? That should be an interesting race next time.
Husband and wife will be twins.
Well, that's what the process is. They're put into a situation to experience what is called equal distribution. But the point is this, when you don't know what you are, and you have to live the horoscope, that's the basis of what you're taking the chance of the food. When you know what you are, like you have the option now to play the horoscope or not to play it. But first establish what you are, and with that understanding, you can play any horoscope. You know what I mean? So this is why it is necessary to know what you are first, so that you're free to play any horoscope, than to just be a victim of the horoscope after it matters. Without knowing what you are, and you still serve people what you are. But first know what you are. So I said, seek ye first the kingdom of God, which is the kingdom of righteousness, how it operates, how you got, and then free you, free men, all love of yourself. Then you can play any role you want. Because you know what you are. But when you don't know what you are, you're going to be constantly fulfilled by who you are instead of what you are. And then you're always going to blame somebody. Or some situation for a lousy deed. That's the who will do that. But the what doesn't do that. The what knows what it is, and therefore the what can accept any role because it's a master win already. It doesn't know what it is. So any role wouldn't make any difference. Now, but if you want to free your mind from road symbols, then take acting course and act the five important modes and train yourself to be free and immune forever. First, the role you practice in the first hour is you're a victim. Then the second role in the second hour, you're the assailant. The third role you act is the whipping parents who are sorry that the child got beat up for bad. And the fourth role, you're the officer who is going to apprehend the assailant. And the fifth hour, the fifth role is the judge who passes the penalty on the person who performed. Then you have a rounded out mode of how these functions work inside of you. Your immunity stays up and you never suffer from ATP. Now ATP is the worst disease, worst of age.
What is it?
Attention getting syndrome. And even God is suffering from that because he wants our attention by making us. See, that's the oldest and worst disease of the world, the most important disease in the world.
And Christopher already knows how to do it.
Yeah.
Why is it the most important?
Well, you see, it's not a disease. It's an opportunity to find out how much attention you can handle. Some people can't handle attention.
Without your ego getting involved.
It's necessary to be exposed to attention to develop immunity as well as to develop a sense of dignity and humility. So it's one of the greatest opportunities for developing immunity when you consider it not a disease, but an opportunity for increasing your immunity. If you consider it a disease, then it's the greatest disease that can ever happen, because none will supersede it. Every other disease will conquer it. So you don't, but you don't like to classify attention-getting syndrome as an actual disease, because it's not an actual disease. It's a means to stimulate immunity if you know how to work with it. So, nothing wrong with having attention given to you, but to be carried away to the craving to be important in the attention, then that can be a disease. You make yourself more vulnerable to that particular situation.
How do you tell when a child is getting? We have a problem with it.
Well, it doesn't want to listen when we're told to do a certain thing.
Like clean up your room? I didn't.
I didn't know it was attention getting.
You see, if you can't obey the parent, when the parent gives the command after three or four repetitions, then it's going to be a illness. You're entitled to refuse to do it for the first and the second time. For the third time, it's the time you start to cooperate because the parent is still there. And they wouldn't tell you to do something if it wasn't for your well-being.
Some would, some wouldn't.
Then that's how you have a problem. So when they took a person from, you have a son, to a karate teacher, and wanted the son to take karate, the teacher looked at the boy and said, "You don't obey your parent." So how do you know that? Well, the way you walk. He says, if you can't obey your parents, don't come back. Now, really shook up the kid because, well, he wanted to take the karate training because he saw karate kids and his dad looking at them. When the teacher looked at him, said, "You don't obey your parents," and he really put him in a bind. Well, he got back later on when the class was signed up, and he had to obey the teacher. kind of when the teacher told him that he didn't have to do it. But he didn't do it. Said, I don't
know. You look at some of these children that are abused now. If they obeyed some of the things their parents told them, in some cases, I think the parent wants attention. You know what I'm saying?
If you look up the horoscope and the biorhythm charts of the so-called abuse, you will find it. It's already set up in that word of the book.
It's a comic word.
Nature doesn't have any something for nothing in this universe. You only get back what you give out. When we become more intellectual and less interactive with our environment, we become afraid of the individuals having to face their own particular confrontation. And we try to take away by insulating them from their confrontation, only to find out you're not helping the person, you're lowering their immune level. In the jungle where I grew up, what I had to learn to survive in this environment will be called child abuse. But what you teach the child here to function in this society, he wouldn't last a second in the jungle. He'd get dead rot. Each location has its own discipline for survival. So we can't often say that a person imposing certain rules of abuse or no abuse or any type of limitation on a person is 100% valid, because each time frame or location is going to be totally different. Now, if a man lives in the jungle and the parent, in order to validate, keep that child, this is what they're told, as soon as the child is born, throw it in the river. If it floats, keep it. If it don't float, forget it.
After 9 months, you
go through that. Now, that would be considered child abuse in this society. In that society,
mother abuse.
In that society, she's doing the most rational thing for what? No matter how she tries to protect that child by reaching down and pulling him out of the water, he's going to drown them. Because he will never survive that jungle. Even if you teach him how to swim, when time comes for him to face the danger condition, you'll fight.
Not a fighter. So he comes up to the United States.
Well, you see, they have another way. I didn't learn the martial arts like people are here in the competition. We only have two rules. The father tells you straight to your face. If somebody hits you, and you get up, make sure when you hit them, they don't get up. But if you want to be a nursemaid for them all their life, then you hit them this way, and make sure you have to hit the person, and then you'll be their nursemaid for all their life. That's to teach you compassion, at the same time teach you humility. At the same time teach that other person not to be vicious. But that's how you were told in the jungle. Now we were told competition. We were told survival. Now that type of survival technique isn't a practical thing in the competition world. the competition is we're training to accept the opponent, to show that we can master the opponent, then let the opponent feel respect. That's different. They throw me in the water as a kid. I came up, I float.
I thought the master burnt the ice down, you didn't get thrown in.
So I floated.
I'm kidding.
Yeah, the house burned down too. What the heck?
Quickly,
yep, the master tried. He really tried.
See, I born, the house is burning down. My mother had to give me up because the house is burning down. You got thrown in the water, you float. They can't nurse you because of you. Everything's gone here, why not body?
Congratulations, you're a winner.
Yeah, I'm a motorist. And then your brother teach you how to survive in the jungle. You gotta listen to the wind all the time and look out for the parrot snake. Now that's a snake that don't walk on the ground. All it does is coil itself up in a little tree. And only when the wind blows, it moves. So you can very well be prepared that you won't be in this way when it's moving. So, if the wind blows, the leaves make noise, and the fire snake is coiled up and it shoots out like a, straight like an arrow from one limb to the other. And then he wraps himself there and says, run away. Then he gets anything to eat. Nine times out of ten, anybody who you find get a bite right here in the neck, and the dead is a jungle, far snake bitten.
Is it a pit viper?
No. They have snakes that bite in your foot.
Yeah, this has two prongs.
This one bites in your neck.
Fine, I should say.
And the color is red, green, like and yellow, like a parrot. That's what they call it, parrot snake. Mm-hmm. And it's long, like an arrow. Go 3 feet long, and when he hits you, that's it. You ain't gonna survive. There's no survival that hits you. Any other snake hits you, you can survive if you get quick enough.
Yeah, the coral is fast. It works on the nerves.
But you can take care of that because it's not gonna bite you here.
That's true.
This one here, it hits you right in the jugular vein and you're over.
It's moving in the air.
So it hits you in the jungle of him and your father. So you got to always listen to the wind. And so when your father and your mother talk to you, listen to your brother, your sister, you always listen to the wind. So pecking order is child abuse in the jungle. But in this society, we call child abuse in the jungle survival. So you listen to your brother, your sister, regardless, you don't, may not like it. They want to get you through the jungle. So that was the way we grew up. You have to listen to your one above you. You don't go and ask your daddy questions or your mother questions. They'll send you back to the brother or sister older than you. Because they got the answer. And they got it from the other brother and sister all the way up. So when you sit down in the family, you know, mom sits down, dad sits down, and the whole gang sits down. And then mom hands dad the fork and knife. And he cuts the piece of meat and he puts it in his plate. And he cuts another piece and puts it in mom's plate. Then the pecking order is done by you the last and get your last.
So you've got good karma with your pecking order brother.
But it's all right.
There are kids because in the U.S. who killed their brother because the stereo is too loud. So what's keeping that brother to keep you alive if you're a pain in the butt? And he's had not in a good humor that day.
He's keeping you alive for one reason. He's got to fight that at age 30, 40 a man. Every brother or sister, the brother has to fight daddy at age 30 to 40 a man. And the sister has to fight mother at the age 13 to prove she's a woman. It's martial art. They're not hitting to kill you. You have to be able to pin your daddy down or you have to be able to fit another time. So at age 13 is what they call the challenging way to become a woman or a man. And they set you up, if you win, then they set you up to get married. And they already select the future husband and the future wife after the competition is over.
I know why you headed for Canada.
So when I pinned my daddy down and I was winner, mom, everybody shouted, "B, you got it, you, winner, daddy, good boy." And they said, "Now this is how you act as a man." Took out a cigar, and I lit it, good. And I lit mine, boom. Mm-hmm. Then he had a jug of rum, big bottle of rum, two glasses.
Is that male ego, or is that my head thinking?
Then pass the bottle around and then say, "Cheers, you're a man today. Cheers. You drink it. You are your lady." What if it's fine? I drink no man. But you didn't beat your daddy either. Daddy tricked you to make you believe you're killing them, because I was walking down Harlem one night. Three guys rushed me up to fight and beat the heck out of me, just like, and I kicked two of them, they went down, the third one I hit him, he went down and started getting up again, and I hit him a second time, and then I ran away. Then I figured, I can't be, I did that to my daddy, he went down. And then I said, "Oh, no, daddy came." And I looked down there, I'll leave it in Harlem, and I said, "Oh, no, boy." I said, "Thank you, Daddy girl, you are glad you take care of us. I had a favorite." He did what he did. He wrestled with me and he faked the fall that I had hit him down to make me feel I'm a man. That was the fake. But he didn't tell me that. I found out the hard way. Since then I said, "No more walking through the night and Harlem like that."
Well, would you have rather said you weren't a man? Since that seemed to have been the important way to live.
When you're living in the jungle, you don't have to make choices.
I would think if you survived till 13, prove it.
The choices are very specific. That's one thing about the jungle. You see, you have to go in the water every day to get the cattle for your daddy. Then the cattle playing his tricks, you know, the cattle like to go in the water. You got to go haul them out. So they send it in. Now they train you to go in the water. You got a long piece of cord, short bamboo, like that, sharpen it both ends, tied in the cord, with a little bit of waist. That's in case the alligator tries to bite you. Take care of him. Then you carry a piece of meat in your hand, and you get to the river, you see the cow over there. You take the meat and throw it up the river. So the piranha fish tend to the meat, and then you jump in the water, and you go for the cow with the lasso, you throw around your neck and pull him out. Then Mr. Alligator is going to move around in the water behind you. So when you're pulling the dog on the cow across, the last alligator is moving in. So you're trained.
Where's brother?
Brother?
That one is supposed to take care of you.
He done go on and do his thing.
He's swimming at the other end.
So you gotta know how to take care of yourself then. So here comes the alligator, but alligators don't bite you underwater. And they don't bite this way. They bite that way. Side. When he opens his mouth, all you do is take a little thing of the bamboo that his brother thought he had to work it. And as soon as he opens his mouth, he puts it inside the mouth.
Who's there too?
Very simple. You got a whole bunch of them in there. So you know where you're going, like that. That's where you're going to walk here. And you put it right there, see, his mouth comes down like that, his mouth goes, "You dig this thing." So there's enough time to put in the insert, and it comes down with knots. So the one end sticks up in the top end of the throat, the other end goes down in the bottom. So the alligator can commit suicide trying to bite your hand. And you got the cord.
Provided, of course, you got it in just right in your hand. Hey,
you got the cord, and you're holding on to the cow ears, pulling them while the water is going on the alligator's throat. So you're like crazy and getting onto the left. But you don't let go of the alligator. You get the cow out of the water, and then you start pulling the alligator off. He's drowned by the water, the choke went on his own foot. But then you come home with meat and your family. Daddy, daddy, mommy, daddy, I got the alligator. Here's the steak tonight for everybody. That's right.
I can't see it. Why don't they give you an Oscar in 13 instead of faking for a matinee? Getting you sick with booze and cigar.
It's really generally respected. You know. But in this society, we call it television. Now, if you go on a boys' camp, there you have to take a lot of different children to survive on a boys' camp.
I don't know when Bruce Kim's got alligators. I wouldn't let my kid go. So it takes nerve to be born in the jungle.
Well, where was Adam and Eve born?
Sperm and yoga.
In a house or in the jungle? Garden of Eden is a jungle. What do you think of that? What do you think of Garden of Eden was jungle? Not for the jungle. The jungle is only a word for what? A bunch of trees all around. What time of the year would God make the first year?
Spring.
Spring, good, you see? And what do you make with belly button?
Yeah.
So then how old would they be?
How old?
One? Can't much survive in the jungle without belly button. That's age one.
13?
How
old were they,
Dr. Esther?
How old were they? We're supposed to figure that out
because
they didn't have any belly
buttons. Mm-hmm. How old did he make them to survive in the jungle?
They were eternal.
Sweet 16?
Good for you. I never heard of sweet 17 yet. Sweet 16. When the hormones are vibrating in you and you got to say, go forth and giraffe yourself, you know? You can't giraffe yourself without firing up your hormones. So they'll eat everything you see in the face of the earth, you see it for food and medicine.
What do you think there? So you had to become a vegetarian?
Then it should have dominion over the universe.
Don't eat the fruit. Don't eat the fruit of that one.
Yeah.
That belongs to the snake over there.
See?
That's my buddy. Don't bother him.
That's the whole psychology of it.
Eve should have thought it came through before she did it. I mean, we could have been pushing computer buttons and getting babies, and then we're doing it the hard way and throwing them in rivers. You're born at the other end of the world. What about, say, Mars? How is birth handled over there? Or Venus? I know my fellow extraterrestrial whoever's...
Well, wait a minute. Mars is a planet to itself.
Okay.
The inhabitant of Mars is what we refer to as a what?
Martian.
But then if Mars is divided into 800 countries, what would you call them now?
United Mars.
United Mars. We don't have a United Earth yet. But they sure got a lot of people living on planet Earth, all scattered all over it. But we are carbon-based bodies. We are called Earth people, terrestrials. They are called Martians. They may be divided between 800 divisions of countries up there. We don't know.
We don't know that Martians really did.
Well, we are busy saying we're going to go and land on their property and claim it for us.
I didn't say that. I just want to know they have babies to reproduce.
We're in for surprise. You see, when Columbus came to this country, he shook the musket and hit the ground and said, in the name of Isabella of Spain, I claim this land. The Indian man behind the rock was shooting bow and arrow, so he couldn't contest with those muskets. But what would be funny if Columbus was hitting the ground with a musket and that same Indian man came out with an M16 machine gun in 1492?
Why
would Columbus would have fly back to Spain in his Santa Maria and say, it's better you can shove it. And then it will face us when we say we're going to land on these people's planet and call it ours for planet Earth. They're going to zap us, we didn't have a place to go back here. With their finger.
Is that why Glenn had such a hard time?
So, it's a very preposterous idea that you can.
That's the sound frequency of your lungs and it's healthy.
Is this the machine we're going to be getting?
No, the other machine is incorporates all of it. This is the other thing.
Okay.
So.
Tell me how you're feeling. I'm not going to tell you a single thing to do with it, but you.
I'm beginning to breathe deeper.
Jump here when you hit the sore spot.
My lungs are good. I have an opportunity to suck up. Pulling the muscles. Spinal.
Interesting, that's some of the lips.
So it's not, this is just a sound device.
That's right, it's a vacuum machine.
It's a vacuum machine.
You know, it's a billion temple that I'm as well in this era. Vacuum the temple that I'm here. Read thereof.
God's little vacuum cleaner.
Yeah. So I applied for the cleaning job.
Oh, you need a cleaning. You can say you've been getting garbage out for a long time. Then you found a new way to do it. Oh, it's not new, is it?
Is that like crystals or
Let me explain something. Trauma all this magnetic changes in the crystals. Therefore, causing them to be toxic or reactive. And the horoscope is the position of the planets through the same magnetic field in your body. So what this is doing is setting a frequency alignment to restore the magnetic balance. This is a magnet, it's sound going to it, coming up from the unit. So the frequency of the normal organ should operate that. So that's something to hear, the normal operation of your lung, heard at the subliminal level, now amplified to the ear at the auditory level.
So the sound you hear when you're holding that out is the sound you should hear when it's against her body, to know that it's cleaned up there?
Yeah.
It reminds me of some of the valve tones you hear when you're checking somebody with the stethoscope. So the lungs, well, the valves are cleaned with air too. Pushing air and pulling back.
That's what I said, it's a magnetic vacuum, using magnetic field to change the toxic gradient.
And that's going down to the lowest cup?
No. Friend, you know, we breathe oxygen, and it's the gas that makes us what?
Yeah.
Conscious, we got that in class one. Consciousness is a phenomenon of the oxygen. Now you have three ways to get into the body. One, through the umbilical cord, the mother pumps it in, but you're not responsible for it. And as soon as the cord is cut, responsibility is placed upon you to take it through your nose. And you're allowed 30 years to mark up and 30 years to clean up. And if you stick it out, then you switch from your nose to your skin. It's called osmotic breathing, which the yogis call unified living. You don't breathe with your nose no more. You breathe through your skin. And that's sonic resonance. Man doesn't live by bread alone, but by every word of the seed of another. Resonance frequency is sustained by osmosis because the body is all skin. So you're doing what is called a unified breathing now. By vacuuming, the mechanism, the lungs now become sensitive to transfer this osmotic action to the entire body, so you can feel the whole body breathing through now for the first time. So it's not breath-free state. There's no breath-free state. It's a breathless state you're arriving at. So when they say the master got into samadhi, mm-hmm. or mahasamadhi, he has taken the full control of the breathless state. Therefore, the body doesn't decompose. As evidence of the mastery of the breathless state.
How did they arrive at it?
By
through meditation?
No, at understanding the physics. They quit breathing with their nose and transfer to the what?
Skin.
Well, now try it. Feel your skin and listen to the sound. That's why I'm giving everyone of you the experience so you the song you're hearing is to make you aware of the amplification of it going on inside of the skin, which you hear when you slow your brain down, and it's called meditation, to hear it at the audible live stream, that's not in there, that's what you're hearing, but you can hear it now. Traveling through the skin.
Mm-hmm.
asanasati.
Begin to push.
Ha ha ha. That means you're detoxifying and you're thawing out. Oxygen is moving through your skin automatically now. Let me clarify one thing. We've had our share of Christianity. We're moving into the actual science of Christianity, which is science of living. Man is God already crystallized, but man is not a God. It's God that crystallizes himself into manifestation. God is pure energy, some, but in order for it to be observed and interact, it has to crystallize into manifestation. So come let us, meaning the elements with the sonic resonance, together put a manifestation into existence with a dualistic interplay, which you call a male-female or attraction-repulsion process based upon the magnetic field, as what you call love. This manifestation is here and now, and all the variations of it, which you call universe, interacting. But it's hoping that the individuality will learn how to recognize its totality within the individuality by the many mistakes it will make until it arrives at a correct opportunity for the individuality to lock in. And that is a carbon body, gone through all the processes, and then lock into the understanding of how the physics work. And that's what they call free man or free woman, lord of the self. You don't have a soul, you are soul or living soil. But living soul is already immortal. That means the atoms are here to stay, they ain't going nowhere. God is here, but he's playing the role of individuality. And individuality cannot be taken back, though it's imposed upon the elements without consent. The elements are allowed to rebel, and then they're allowed to volunteer, and that's the compensation. The compensation is when they volunteer, they have a carbon based body, which is already set up to be immortal. So you don't own anything. You experience touch, which you crave as an element in the form of flesh. And then you recognize you're already immortal, but you can bring it about in flesh by understanding. And then you are free access to the universe as God in man, not man in God. God wants to be man, free within his own nature, moving about the universe as man, manifested form. But it has to work its process out all by itself in order to reap the reward. So brothers and sisters who have come, they only offer us three ways: abuse, avoidance, or control. Now, abuse is first, avoidance is second, control is last. Within control comes understanding, and that's the grace. So we end up all recognizing our conscious immortality by understanding, and not by the abuse or by the avoidance. So we have to practice, I'll go through all the other two. Whenever we acquire the understanding and the control of the understanding, then we are glory to the God. Because that's the highest form it wants. It wants the understanding, not the miracle or the magic or the avoidance or the... It wants the understanding. That's what Paul was the first to break through with, saying, "I rebuke you and you rejoice in for I live and I did in God. I don't want the miracles, I want the understanding." He was the first real breakthrough. Mm-hmm. Today we see it as the most
rather than the true processes presented to the mechanism. I agree with you.
I seem to be sweating. I'm not aware of the numbness that much, except for the pain in my back. Sweating? Perspiring.
Huh? You look a little different.
Now I know why we didn't put in another set of clothes. I mean, I can see this is crazy.
How do you feel about?
Wet.
And she's wet, she's cleaning out her pores, is that what's happening?
Yeah, right.
Except for the sore spot.
Yeah, you right got a there. Bunch of your mommy about her traumas. Travel.
If you don't sweat, and you keep doing it?
Yeah.
See, that's been my problem. I wouldn't sweat. Even in a sauna, B would sit there and sweat, turn it up, and I wouldn't sweat until I came out and you know, be cool. And then I would sweat.
Good, how are you feeling now?
Sweaty.
Not pretty good enough.
Yeah, I've got sore spots. And I'm really sore down here.
Good. Destroy the carbon dioxide.
A lot of hot air.
You know, see, that's how you learn that your skin breathes, but then when you block it, it causes pain. Now it's frozen, there's no pain. These are only labels for lack of understanding. How are you feeling now?
Keep on the work.
It's
crazy.
You're
going to say that, okay? I'm not going to give him a good drink.
No, I think it feels so wonderful. But I think you just say that all day.
Yeah. Feeling good now?
I'm loosening up.
Yeah.
But maybe by 5, you'll feel better.
Tranquilizer, where are you going to get it? In the skin or in the mouth?
In the mouth.
If you go in the mouth, what is tranquilized? The pain or the pressure from the colon to the area that reduces the pressure where the impact is occurring. So inside the colon, the tranquilizer goes and clamps down on the valve. And there the peristaltic valve is shut down temporarily to inhibit any pressure building up to the area of impact. So you get a sensation of pain being turned off. When in actuality, it's a numbness induced by the constriction of the substance in the colon.
All right. All right.
As soon as that period has passed, the pressure builds back again, simply because the endorphins are not triggered to take over. You have to trigger the endorphins to take over. If you trigger the endorphins to take over, you don't need a tranquilizer.
But to trigger the endorphins to take over, you got to trick them. That's the funny part about it. They're knocked off of their particular behavior when you get the impact, and they're knocked down. And to trick them back, there are three ways. A strong substance will force them to go in. Megadoses will trick them. Or one that acts like them. So if you got an itch, give you something that will itch itch. And so we go in. It's like a CIA checking at the FBI, at the FIB. So it's a kind of internal game they play, and then they switch on back. So what they do is now, we have found that we can bypass these things without going through the mouth, without going through the skin, by integrating it sonically. So to send the actual sound was there before it got shown up, the sound now is non-invasive, but the sound is more geometrically attuned, forcing whatever causes to be distorted to get out of the way for the first time and go back to its normal operation. So the endorphins take over now by their own sonic potency.
I was thinking always to get answers.
But that's the way we're trained, so we can't blame them for that.
Yeah. I know, but the body has no chance.
I feel the breathing is easier.
Yes, that's what you've been observing, that the sound is actually opening up the breathing.
Mm-hmm.
Sound is actually opening up the breathing.
That's what happened to the therapist, the machine, and all. Should I stop back on the little body plan?
Yeah.
Thank you. It feels good.
Then you see the normal reaction is that it wants to perspire all over because oxygen is now getting into the body.
Mm-hmm.
Moving on time, all the time. So I repeat again, life is elements of a certain weight and pH factor moving on time all the time, and you are a result of this particular phenomenon by the sound waves directing the timing to come into a geometry. So they say the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God, and the Word was made flesh and dwelt in men. You are held together by the resonance of the harmonics. Take away the harmonics, you fall apart, and you become dust. Put back the harmonics, you come together, you look like skin. So if you're dust, before you keep together a skin, and you can't get rid of dust, then you're already immortal. See, but we don't think of it that way. We think of dust as something dirty, disposable, no use. If you are dust, before you became a tissue and a geometry, you're already immortal if you went back to dust.
I don't know why it's triggering, but I remember Satsangi going to Zara, and he said, she's been her whole damn dusting the same Maharaji's chair. And every time she dusted, she was dusting it again. And somehow or another, that triggers. I don't understand exactly why, except that immortality. She thought she was going to dust that chair forever.
Elements are immortal. How can they go away? What is an element? Now think of the word element. What is it? It's a label for apple.
For apple.
And the geometry gives it a name. So a certain quantity come together to make a certain geometry is called iron. A certain quantity and a certain geometry come together, they call it calcium. To differentiate the two from the same, but they're made of the same 4 or 6 or 8. See what I mean? So that's what we're talking to ourselves.
This is the first time in my life I ever had a nail to grow in like this. Is that the lung that got stopped up? Because back in February, I was in a room that had a lot of smoke, and I think I coughed for a couple of days.
No, you're feeling better.
In months. I feel fine. It feels
good. You're feeling better?
I think so. Very good. That means then the nail is
going to
come
out
straight.
You're breathing, you're breathing better, you're getting all better.
How's
that? Yeah, I feel inspiration. Feels good. I feel... Okay, who's next? I'm going to stay till 5 o'clock.
Yeah. Thank you. If you see the trace minerals, you will notice that there are some of them that repeat themselves. And the most important one in repetition is iodine. Iodine is a trace mineral that takes most importance because it's the only trace mineral that can feed lung strontium.
It's the only what?
Trace mineral that can feed lung strontium. If you get a radiation burn, you need iodine to build it back. So the seaweed gives you your iodine, the miso is absorbed. When they made miso for the radiation burn people in Nagasaki, Hiroshima, they put the iodine at the face down the strontium nitrate for the radiation. And so strontium is there in the trace mineral. It's present in the nuclear explosion, but it takes iodine to phase it down. So when Chernobyl had a problem, everybody was busy buying up iodine, trace liquid iodine for the trunk to insulate them against the inhalation of any kind of effect in the air or any overexposure to the strontium nitrate. So it immunizes the body. So you have your trace of iodine and it falls in the yellow and the green color spectrum. But you'll notice that the bulk of all these trace minerals are located in that area of the body, in the yellow and the green. That's to ensure you that you get the proper digestion in your small intestine, your blood and your kidney, and the heart. And you'll see that the heart has two colors, orange and yellow. And the kidney has two colors, green and blue. But those are shunt organs, drawing from both light processes. So the heart draws from the orange, and it draws from the yellow. The kidney draws from the green, and it draws from the blue. So the trace minerals that are operating in the two colors affect the shunt organs the most. So we need to keep the shunt organs always reinforced. That's why when they have a heart transplant, the kidney gives out. Now in the future, they're not going to do heart transplant. They're going to cut their heart open, put in a valve, and sew back the heart up, and keep the original heart. So that's what they're doing now. They're going to shunt
they cut the, set up a kind of a pump where they cut into the heart and shunt the fluid out of the heart into that pump.